The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Dory continues to recover from knee replacement surgery. It's great to have him last hour with The Big Lead. Oh, he'll keep recovering. He just sounds better every time he comes on. And when he's first coming on, do you know that he came on? If you don't know this, Dory joined the show from the hospital with the EKG in the background. And then the next day, I think he finally took a day off because I think Nicole said, no, your wife, everybody else is saying you're in this in tremendous pain. So he continues to heal. The plan is for Dory to be back Monday, this coming Monday, which is great for everybody. Dory and I talked about this earlier. By the way, it's Todd Herman filling in for Dory. Dory and I talked about this earlier in The Big Lead. It involves a guy we both know. I consider Todd Myers a friend. He works at the Washington Policy Center. Now, here's something about Myers. He stands by and wants some carbon taxes, as I understand his position. I heard him debate this in front of a conservative audience, that he wants these things. He is an environmentalist, true and true. He just sees solutions differently than the state. For instance, for carbon exchanges, Todd would prefer to spend 3 cents for every 30 bucks the state spends, because Todd is aware that a lot of this, I think, is money-making schemes versus environmental schemes. So Myers was down testifying in Olympia and gave his point of view on carbon taxes, etc. This is a conversation that he recorded with a guy who was walking along with him and appears to be, in my judgment, truly, truly ill-balanced, but was also down there, apparently, maybe testifying.
What you just said.
You deserve to suffer and die and suffer in hell as much as all the billions of lives and life forms that will suffer more because of your words, because of your rhetoric and your debate team tactics at twisting the truth and making a buck. Yeah, I don't know how you can live with yourself making a buck off of damage to biology.
Damage to biology. So Todd, again, is in favor of some carbon taxes in carbon exchange, so-called markets. He and I disagree on this. He would just like to do it in a way that doesn't cost unduly, like I said, 100 times the amount of money that Washington State's going to do it for. Todd is where we could do it 1/100th of that. He preferred to do that. So here is Todd's reaction to this guy who's just, in my judgment, and I am not a psychiatrist, but do you need to be? Dude is completely unhinged. Todd Myers' reaction to this guy apparently is super into bees.
I made a point a few years ago that we need bees, and bees are in danger of extinction, and you mocked me in public and then said, I'm a beekeeper, and bees are actually doing great.
I said, honeybees are increasing.
You can take any point and do that while bees are going extinct, you bastard, you monster. Bees are going extinct, and you're making debate points.
Wow. Okay, so everybody gets emotional about some things. This guy apparently gets emotional about bees and wishing painful death upon Todd because Todd is pointing out that honeybees are doing great. All right. Our area, as you know, it's just dissolving into crime. And it's because of the drug dealing. It's because of the cartels know that they can come here and be free to deal drugs, fentanyl, meth, heroin, etc. They know they can do that in the camps. They know they've got active takers, addicts, and sort of captive addicts living in these huts and these tents. They know that. The tiny villages. They know Scott Morrow doesn't mind people getting stoned in there. They know that they don't mind that there's trafficking going on there. This leads to a lot of the crime that we see in our area. Q13 talked with an Edmonds resident that knew a clerk who was murdered this weekend for doing his job.
It's really cold. I don't know. I'm hurting. Edmonds is really quiet. You don't really expect that. I moved away from that thinking I would get away from crime, but I guess the crime followed me.
Look, the crime is going to follow us everywhere until we do something to stop it, which will involve actually prosecuting criminals, not turning them back out, not letting them go, not refusing to charge them, as has been the way that's, the Pete Holmes and Dan or Dow Constantine want things done. And Dan Satterberg, it will continue to unfold this way. But here's what's so, this makes me feel so guilty, what I'm about to share with you. I hear a report like that. I think, wow, this guy sounds like he was, you know, so loved in the community. So he's a store clerk that people love to visit with. He's brightened their day, etc. His life is taken. Then I see this article. And I was doing show prep last night in the front room. Family was hanging out. My daughter was doing her thing. My wife was doing hers. We were all just kind of after dinner, after the walk of the dogs, etc. together. They're kind of doing her own thing. I feel so guilty about this because I started to read this and it was show prep. Okay, so this is just, to me, it was a show prep. I see the headline, South Seattle man brutally attacked his way to work. I think, oh, that's horrible. And it's just one of the continuing themes in our city and in our area in Western Washington. Then I realized that the gentleman in the video is a guy I know. And it materially changed how I viewed this. And that shouldn't be the case. It shouldn't matter that I didn't know the Edmonds store clerk. I should view this all the same. But I look at this article, and this is a guy I used to see every morning because he worked at the gym I worked out at, a fantastic gym called Seattle Fitness. It was in downtown Seattle, 83 King Street, as I remember. Fantastic owners. I had a trainer there that I haven't seen in many years. Jerome was my trainer. Loved Jerome. Had him over to my house. Consider him a friend. I just haven't seen him in a long time. So this gentleman's name is Nathan Wyatt. He was walking to work at 5 o'clock in the morning. Now, that tells you something about Nathan. As long as I've known him, he was every day at the gym before we got there, every day at the gym. No matter what his day was like, I would walk in early in the morning, 6 o'clock, sometimes 5:30 to work out. Every morning, I got an incredible greeting from this guy, a smile on his face. He and I disagreed on some things. We had some fun political talks. We had fun talks about taxation, etc. 5 o'clock in the morning, he's going to work, and three guys come up, and they surround him. And they said, what set are you in? So, meaning, what gang are you in? This is just before 5 a.m. on Martin Luther King Way Jr. in Othello Street. And Nathan said, I'm not in a gang. He said, I don't have a set. I'm going to work. So they beat him. And they beat him so badly. You see the right side of his face is swollen. This is from our news partners at Cairo 7. He has fractures in the bones in one of his eyes. And they took his backpack, which had some over-the-counter medication and some personal things in it. And they left. So for no other reason than walking to work, an incredibly hardworking man who is, I got to check and see if he's still at Seattle Fitness. In fact, I'm going to try to track him down after the show because I want to see if there's anything we can do. This is a person legitimately unable to harm anybody, legitimately a guy who works 12-hour days and always has. Now, compare this to what Jenny Durkin has told this area. Compare this to what Pete Holmes is telling this area. Jenny's running for re-election. She says Seattle is safe. We've made these great strides. Everybody's welcome. We have Danny Westneat at the Seattle Times telling us there's no problem with crime. He doesn't know that because the crime dashboard isn't being tracked. We have Pete Holmes saying we can't arrest our way out of these problems. I'm going to guarantee the people who beat Nathan up absolutely have priors. You know they have priors, and I know they have priors. Everybody knows it. So your own eyes tell you this as you look around our area, and we can't arrest our way out of having repeat criminals on the street. That doesn't make any sense. We can't arrest our way out of preventing a store clerk doing his job in Edmonds from being shot for doing his job when you know the people who did this had priors. Everybody knows they have priors. What's so incredible to me is the way the local media continues to give any credence to Pete Holmes. Or to Dan Satterberg. Or to Jenny Durkin. Until these people say, we have a gang problem. Until these people say, yes, we're going to continue to have open-air heroin, and we recognize that it's brought violence to our area. Until they're honest about this. Or Pete Holmes just says, I don't want to arrest people. I don't want to charge people. Until there's just a slice of honesty from these people, why are they giving credence? Why are they treated when there is a news story, I'll see on TV, when the occasion happens that Pete Holmes occasionally gives an interview? Why is he given credence? Why is he given respect? I truly mean this. If you're a prosecutor who fails to prosecute, how do you keep the title prosecutor? And where is the skepticism for Holmes and Constantine and Durkin that the media in Western Washington constantly tosses at the Trump administration? Anything the Trump administration does, they will go out and find savage critics of the Trump administration. They can't seem to find anyone who's in favor of Trump making this or that move. So you read them, you watch them. It is all skepticism about Trump. They don't have anybody to come on from his side. Oh, they might say Republicans claim this or Trump supporters claim that. But when they have these three people who are legitimately ruining this area, leading to assaults like what happened to Nathan, leading to this gentleman losing his life when he's doing nothing more than his job at a store in Edmonds, leading to the things you see with your own eyes. We talked last hour about people digging into our infrastructure under I-5, the structural engineer I talked to at this hotel in Seattle made mention of that. Where is that skepticism? And then the few times where there's been true skepticism thrown at Constantine by the media, it creates discomfort in some of the media channels. Well, I don't know if we want to, it seems pretty heavy-handed. You know, maybe we're going to lose access. Fascinating dynamic, isn't it? So my prayers for Nathan, if you're somehow listening, I'm sorry that I have not been in touch. You are a great guy. In fact, I am going to find Nathan. If they can find him, I'm going to find him. See if there's a way we can help. All right, next up in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
We talk often on the show about just the chaos that has been introduced into the Seattle, Western Washington area. And you know the stories, but this one is just, you can say it's one more, but it's not, because it happened to a family and it's devastating. Joni joins us, and Joni, welcome to the Dory Monson Show. Todd Herman filling in.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
So tell people what happened. Far be it for me to tell people, but tell people what happened to your little boy, and let's just run through this story. It's maddening.
Well, it started on Tuesday. He was taking some books and videos back to the library, and he lost his phone. Then on Wednesday, he decided to ride his bike and go look and see where perhaps he may have dropped it. And so he put his bike up against a fence at the corner of where he was at when he last remembered having the phone in his hand, and some gentleman, probably in his late 30s, was yelling at him. He was walking by with a speaker in his hand, and my son couldn't quite make out what he was saying, but he was talking about his bike. And then all of a sudden, this person just grabbed his bike and went the other way and running down the street. And it's quite a busy intersection. It's the 100th Street in Lakewood. And I've always told him, don't go after your stuff. It's not that important. And so he didn't, you know, and he came home, and then eventually he told me what happened. And I was just so mad because, you know, I moved to that area and that particular community because I really feel like Lakewood Council and the mayor, they're more conservative than where we came from. We came from Puyallup, and that area has become just horrible. And so, you know, it's moving into every community, and it was devastating to my son, not only to lose his phone the day before, but then to have his bicycle stolen, which is basically his transportation, because he doesn't drive due to his autism and his comorbidities and things.
So that's what I wanted to talk about as well, is your son, beloved son, like a lot of kids, has some challenges. One of them is he's on the autism spectrum, and some other challenges that this, how does he feel about this? Because I know, you know, you're growing up with those challenges that can be hurtful to begin with. And I take it that you're a great mom and you know, do a great job of supporting your son. But does that like feel extra hurtful for him to just have some stranger walk up and yank his bike away and go running away with it?
Yes, because in some ways he can't understand it. Other times where people have, you know, maybe taken something or a toy he's dropped or what have you, he's kind of like, well, I guess they needed it more than me. He doesn't have any behavioral issues, so he's not acting out in that way, but he is upset that somebody would just, you know, steal his bike. And, you know, I talked about the type of person that may have done it, and, you know, we're always talking about safety no matter where we're at, and I, as a parent of a vulnerable, you know, young adult, just am devastated at times that, you know, you don't feel like you can let your children ride the bus or wait at a bus stop or, you know, just do the normal things that we used to do when we were younger, because there's always somebody coming at you for money or, you know, just being belligerent for no reason whatsoever. And yeah, he's devastated. He just doesn't understand why people do the things that they do. And I don't either.
No, I mean, well, I can guess, and I can guess that it's drugs, and I can guess that it's empowerment. I can guess that they are under the correct impression that they're not going to be prosecuted for property crimes, that if they're arrested, they're going to be held for a day and let go, that they're allowed to shoot up heroin openly, that they're allowed to carry around meth and fentanyl and use that openly, that there is sex trafficking run amok in our city, that they're empowered. They understand, and I get this from cops all the time, they understand, a lot of these people, that they are a protected class. And they have been taught and it's been demonstrated to them that there is nothing they can do to get in serious trouble. So that's just a guess, Joni. But let me ask you this. Is your son, does he feel less safe now in his neighborhood? Does he worry about violence? Or were you able to, you know, explain to him that this person just wanted your bike?
A little bit of both, you know, but also too, he's a little insulated because of the autism and the other issues that go on with him. You know, he sometimes thinks that, you know, he can ride his bike anywhere and it'll be fine. But then when these types of things happen, it's a good lesson to remind him that there are not very good people out there and they will take advantage of you. So in one way, it's, you know, it's hard for him, but in another, I look at it as a blessing because I can reiterate back to him, do you see why I say no riding your bike after dark, no buses after dark, you know, even, you know, as the sun's coming down, I think I'm more affected by it than he seems to be. But he does talk about it and, you know, called the guy a schmuck, you know.
Well, listen, we wish your little boy, I shouldn't say little boy, we wish your son the very best. We wish you the very best. And I appreciate you sharing your story. I'm glad to hear. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say, it's good to know that he's a little bit insulated from this and that he is not walking around in fear or riding around in fear. Let us know if there's anything we can do to help you. We just appreciate you coming on Dory's show today. Thank you very, very much, Joni.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to meet you. And I wasn't expecting this at all, but a nice pleasure.
Coming up, I just saw this on the Dory Monson show with Toderman filling in. Did you see the response that President Trump got in India? He got there were tens of thousands of people in this stadium. He got a massive round of applause when he mentioned fighting radical Islamic extremism and terrorism. Huge round of applause. CNN has found a way to criticize this visit, and it has to do with something that goes into Donald Trump's mouth versus comes out. That's next. It's Todd Herman filling in for Dory Monson. I think Dory says rounding the bends on the big show. He'll be back, we hope, Monday. He's still recovering from knee replacement surgery. CNN had to find a way They had to find a way to criticize President Trump's trip to India because the stadium was packed. Personally, me, I cannot understand going to see in person any politician give a speech. I can't. It's just not who I am. I look at them as employees to do our job, not people to go watch speak. Any president. But that was different in India. Lots of people see that differently. They filled the stadium, tens of thousands of people. See, you can't then criticize that. The leadership in India apparently really embraced President Trump. He got a massive round of applause, standing ovation, when he said that we need to fight radical Islamic terrorism, which in India, of course, is a very pronounced problem. So CNN went hunting. How can we criticize the president's appearance in India? So they tweeted this. President Trump, then my computer dies. They had to find this tweet, a way to go at him on Twitter. And it was about what he eats.
Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, will you? Well, yeah. I got it. I got it. President Trump, whose diet is often a rotation of steaks, burgers, and meatloaf, faces a potential shock as he visits India, where Hindus are the majority and cows are revered as sacred. A huge shock. If only he had a staff to brief him on all of this. It has been a really bad time for the media. That's CNN continuing to show what they have become. This is MSNBC's Joy Reid reminding you that she is basically an actress. Her reading from the teleprompter.
If it's Sunday, it's Denny. In this instant, Vice President Mike Pence's chief of staff, Mark Short, refuses to... Oh, Denny. What does that mean? Oh, my producers wrote that in there. It's deny. Denny, I'm like, who's Denny? Basically, you have the vice president's chief of staff just sort of making stuff up. The New York Times reports that intelligence officials briefed lawmakers last week that Russia is once again, this is when you get a surprise script, attempting to interfere in our election to help Donald Trump win. Back with me are Jonathan Capehart, Maria Teresa, and Tiffany. People who can actually read are back with me. So basically what's going on... I'm sorry.
That's a low bar.
I'm laughing at my own incompetence.
It's a low bar.
As Dory said in The Fastest 15, that this is Ron Burgundy stuff. If your job is reading things out loud that you actually have not read in advance, you don't know what they say, how do you do anything other than a stage actor or actress? Every word that comes out of their mind or out of their mouth is written down. And we're to believe that this is news, this is discussion, this is debate. It's phenomenal that this is accepted as that. Hey, continue to offer your prayers for Joy for his recovery. We're planning to have him back on this coming Monday as he takes his seat where he belongs in the big show. It's Todd Herman filling in for Dory Monson. Some closing thoughts as we continue on the big show. Hey, it's Todd Herman. What a great time filling in for Dory Monson on Power Radio. Really appreciate being on here the past 2 weeks. And one more week till Dory is better, back at it in person on the big show. That's the plan as he recovers from knee replacement surgery. If you want to keep up in touch with me and see what I'm going to be doing, see if I do another radio show, you can tweet me at Toddy Herman. You might recognize this song, but you might not actually know where it's from. If you listen to a lot of talk radio, you'll recognize it, but you might not know the history of this. You actually get nervous here. So this is a song called My City Was Gone, and it's by The Pretenders, and Rush Limbaugh has used this for years as his bumper music, and puts it on loop. So over the weekend, Rush posted something really interesting about Chrissy Hynde, and Chrissy Hynde is the songwriter of the song. She was with a band called The Pretenders, legendary sort of pseudo-punk band that wrote this song.
was no train station. There was no downtown.
So Chrissy Hynde is no conservative. She, I think, describes herself as a radical feminist. And she, over the weekend, congratulated Rush Limbaugh for receiving the National Medal of Honor and thanked President Trump for presenting it to Limbaugh. As I understand Chrissy Hynde's position, she is pro-abortion, very liberal, etc. But she made a reference to the fact that her dad would have loved the way President Trump is governing. And then she said something that's so incredibly vital. That is that she appreciates the right to disagree. The right to disagree. And one thing I've learned in our country is we're at a dangerous, dangerous point right now where the right to disagree is being stifled by social media companies, absolutely stifled, and in fact being killed by our own, I guess, cold civil war we're in. Some of my favorite people in the world are people with whom I disagree. Some of my favorite people in the world are people with whom I agree on very, very little in politics. And that's not going to change. We're going to be in a cold civil war, a tug of war for many, many years to come, because the alternative is kind of unthinkable. That is that we never again have any ability to go back and forth. So some of the folks I've met in my life with whom I disagree and continue to love. Nicole, let's turn that down because now I'm starting to groove to the music. I'll start with this, my mom. So my mom is a pretty liberal woman. I would say a very liberal woman. And on most topics, we disagree. Political. However, there's been some shifts over the past year or so. My mom has come to recognize the excesses of what is being done to children under transgender ideology. My mom has come to recognize what's being done in opioids and the sponsoring of opioids and the open use of it in Seattle and Western Washington is an extreme. She's come to realize these things. But on the core of issues, my mom and I agree on things that are, I think, in one way, far more important than politics. We agree on the need to connect on an emotional level, to hear one another, to hear our feelings. We agree on the absolute priority that society needs to make around children and around making sure children are safe and that children have opportunities to grow up free range, which is something I wasn't great at as a father. It surprises me how bad I was at that, I didn't allow my kid to have the sort of free range she should have had. That we agree on the priorities of schools. My mom was a school teacher, and she's looking at the excesses of the so-called sex education, which is, in my judgment, just pure propaganda. Pure propaganda designed to absolutely confuse kids and ultimately to cause disruption and chaos. Whereas Dory has said before about other things, you cause a problem, then you swoop in and you solve it for money. I don't know though my mom agrees it's propaganda. I think she agrees it's overboard. But we agree that the core duties of school are to teach children how to think, how to question, how to be skeptical, how to find facts, how to ascertain knowledge, how to retain it, how to explain it. So we agree on those things. We agree on family, that sometimes families are not going to disagree, are not going to agree on the issues of the day, but the issues of life, the issues of the core. These are things that keep us together. Another person with whom I commonly disagree is my sister. My sister is a very liberal woman. She is an incredibly, incredibly smart woman, far smarter than I am in many ways. She is a medical professional, first of all, a researcher. Her mind is so organized, such a clean space. My mind is not a clean space. It is not organized. I think in different ways of my sister, nonlinear. I think my sister is more of a linear thinker. She and I disagree on President Trump. My sister does not like the president and does not like his policies. And the other day, she and I sat and had lunch and I heard her. Okay. She's my sister and I love her and I would give both kidneys for her today. If someone came and said, your sister needs both kidneys, I'd say, okay, let's go. I'd do it in a heartbeat. I sat and listened to her feelings about the president and we didn't talk policy. I listened to my sister's fears. And I let her know that I love her outside of the, or with these fears included. We could talk policy. She and I can actually do that reasonably. But my sister and I agree on so many other things. Reagree on the primacy of your children, knowing you love them no matter what. Mistakes they might make, missteps that might occur, right? Challenges they face. You love them through these things. They may end up, I have a prediction that one of my sister's kids is going to end up being a radical capitalist entrepreneur. One of her, both her kids are brilliant, but I have this prediction that one of them is going to end up being a radical capitalist entrepreneur. And I know this, that my sister will love that child absolutely and unquestionably, and we agree on that. We also agree to some degree on how we were raised. We agree that we had parents who weren't perfect, parents who made mistakes, that parents who absolutely, unquestionably loved us. Even when sometimes, frankly, there were hard, it was kind of hard for my sister to see that sometimes. We now agree on this. We agree that it is our responsibility as adults to see past the things that divide the world so that we can never be divided. You see, this is one of the things that I think my mother and my sister and I disagree on, is I believe there are political actors in the nation today whose design is to destroy the family. It is to destroy child-parent relationships. You look in Canada. There's a guy whose kids, whose young daughter basically got taken from him. A court decided at 14, she was wise enough to decide to be injected with 200 times the amount of testosterone that would ever be in a female body. He's speaking out about this, and he is going to be put in prison for speaking out. The Canadian courts have told him he needs to shut up or he goes to prison. They're charging him with family violence because he refuses to call his daughter his son. Family violence. There are actors in society, in my judgment, who want to tear apart the family, destroy the parental relationship with the children, render it moot, non-existent. I know that's going on in politics. I don't think my sister and my mother agree with that. And that's why it's so important that I not let it happen to us. And I won't. I love my sister and I love my mother. And there is nothing, nothing in this world that will ever change that. My prayer is that people will begin to look and say, why is it a good idea for government to give kids secret access to medical and mental so-called care? Why is it a good idea for the government to teach kids, don't go to your parents when you have questions about sexuality. Don't go to them. Come to us and we won't tell. Why is it a good idea for any adult to make a habit, in fact, a policy of going to children and saying, don't trust your parents with the most intimate of decisions. Come to Big Papa, Big Mama government. I hope that my friends with whom I disagree will one day wake up and ask themselves, why is that a good idea? It's Todd Herman. It's always an honor to fill in for Dory Monson. And coming up, two guys who absolutely know how to disagree and do it better than anybody in radio. Tom and Carly now on 3 to 7 on Cairo Radio. And music filling the air. From Seneca to Cahoga Falls. City, oh, where to go, Ohio.
A hero is part human and part supernatural. A hero is born out of a childhood trauma or out of a disaster that must be avenged.
Okay, you're thinking of a superhero.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.